I'm gonna leave this little old town. I made up my mind. Gonna see what I can find across the bridge. Over there, there's a million faces across the bridge. A brand new kicks and exciting places across the bridge, just waiting for me. And I've been told the streets of the city are paved with gold. I'm gonna leave this little old town. I made up my mind. Gonna see what I can find across the bridge.
Across the bridge.
And maybe fame above the bridge. I'm gonna make those people, Lord, I'm gonna know my name above the bridge. I'm gonna make that city mine. And while I do it, have a heck of a time above the bridge.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Shake a Tail Feathers signing off for you. We just heard Brenton Wood with Cross the Bridge, Brother Jack McDuff before that with Hot Barbecue, and Billy Butler with The Boston Monkey. If you want to get this show as a podcast, go to CITR.ca, find podcasts under the menu, and help yourself. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Queer FM Arts Extra is about to start any moment. I'm going to go out with The Blossoms. This is Deep Into My Heart.
Welcome to Queer FM Community. I'm still Aiden Saint. And it's been a fantastic here in Vancouver. The weather has been fantastic. We are just got better, just got over the out games, and just got over doing all the Pride festivities. And then what happened?
And then we decided to move.
Okay, decided personally we were going to move. Yes, thank you, Justin. This is Justin Saint.
Hello.
And
I'm the husband. I'm the one who's kind of been... But besides all the packing we've been doing, we've also been watching some films.
And here in the studio for Queer FM Community, we have... for this show, we have a fantastic news gaggle with some of our... youth broadcasters from Community, but we have a special little segment we wanted to do, and for that we have the host of Shake a Tail Feather, Vanessa Tara.
Right. As soon to be, I should add to that, I will be explaining that a little bit further on in the summer.
Indeed.
You will all get it. But yes, I did go to the Queer Film Festival, and it was fantastic. What I did see of it, of course, usually there's more films than you get a chance to see.
There's no way you could see all of them.
Right.
Technically, I think you technically could, if you really tried, you could see probably 90% of them.
Right.
Because they
take the week off, you could do that.
Yeah, some of them play multiple times, but there's some films that only play once. You'd have to, like, split yourself in two.
Well, it's been done. Star Trek, I mean, it can be done. Where's our transporter? Anyway, the point is that they had this year, especially, at least it seemed that way to me, they had a lot of films that dealt with transgendered issues and youth issues, and it seemed more well-rounded. I mean, even the Leather film that I saw yesterday was pretty amazing, but we'll talk about that one during Queer FM. During Queer FM Community, I wanted to talk about a couple of the films that you all have seen.
Right.
I saw Madame X, I saw the shorts, and the various short films they had, I think it was Wednesday, including a couple of fantastic short films. But one of the films that that you saw Orchids, and tell us what you saw.
Well, the first film I saw in the festival was on the 12th, and it was called Gun Hill Road. And of course, I've been following the publicity and the promotion for this on Facebook and on the internet for months. And it played twice. It also played this past Friday, but it played at 7 p.m. on Friday the 12th, and I couldn't wait to see it. I mean, it's all over my personal blog. And when I did, I wasn't disappointed. It was a fantastic film. Gun Hill Road, for those of you who haven't heard, is just been released officially in the States. It's set in the Bronx. It's ostensibly about a father who spent a few years in prison, comes back, and of course his family has been continuing to go on without him. He's also lived a life of crime, so I mean, they've generally been making do without him for the most part. But when he comes back home, he finds that, child he regards as his son is actually his daughter transitioning, and he has a very huge amount of difficulty dealing with it, and it makes for a really fascinating story, very heart-wrenching as well. And the really distinctive feature here is, and we're starting to see this more and more, but the main character, who is the transgendered daughter, is played by a transgendered actress by the name of Harmony Santana.
Oh, that was fantastic.
That's really
who
cool.
Who is a stunner, I must say.
Well, the other thing that I found rather notable about this film, you know, you can't go to all of them, so this was one of the ones I couldn't make.
Right.
But I was struck by the fact immediately, I noticed Isai Morales to have the Hispanic representation, especially in the U.S.
Yes,
there are some segments of the United States culture that it is definitely taboo. The being gay or lesbian is not well received.
Right,
African American culture, especially, and in the Hispanic community.
Culture as well.
Yeah.
But although there's quite an extensive history in both cases. Yeah,
I know, isn't it? Isn't it crazy? What else did you see?
I also saw this past Wednesday, I saw a package of three short films, actually, called Transgenerational, made up of three films. The first was called I'm Just Annika, which is about a transgendered child who, I mean, hasn't quite formulated, I'm going to say her because she hasn't quite decided yet, but her identity, although she presents in a very masculine fashion, and it's quite likely she'll transition later, but she hasn't. She's presented that way. She's of middle school age. Her parents are completely supportive. Her friends are supportive. And it's an interesting, and I might add, local documentary as well. It's filmed here. The other two films were made in Australia. One features a writer by the name of Tom Cho, who is an FTM, transgender person, who does sort of poems, performance art, and so on, is kind of an autobiographical piece. It's very interestingly done. And then the third film, I'm trying to remember what it's called. Well, the second was called Mind. The third one, I'm trying to remember, Sally's Story, I think it was called.
Yep.
And it's about a transgender woman coming out as such. And she has a career in radio and all that. So it's really about coming out later in life, which I can say is found in a few different films in the festival this year.
And that's one of the things that we'll be bringing up later in our discussions on Queer FM community, is the talking with some of our youth. And even just the hypothetical argument of the Bert and Ernie thing down in the States where they're trying to, you know, get them married, supposedly. And what I found, the puppets from Avenue Q, yes, there's a context for that.
Right.
But the other, it's like, oh, just leave it alone. We have other things to worry about. But one of the things I found interesting is talking with him, he just didn't, it never occurred to him that people come out later in life.
It does happen.
It didn't, but it didn't occur to him. He just kind of went, really? And it's like, wow. Oh. I feel old suddenly.
Oh, boy.
DJV, one thing I kind of noted with Gun Hill Road is that you share a name with the trans protagonist.
That's correct. Yeah. V is short for Vanessa. I'll just say it. I mean, I'm transgender myself, and I'm going through a transition. I'm going through transition right now, so that's something that isn't part of my. I haven't brought that out on my own show, but I will. I will this summer. This is just taking some behind the scenes logistics as far as PSAs and all of that stuff.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, again, in talking with the one of the youth broadcasters, Neo, it's hard to have that perspective when you're 22 years old, unless, especially if you were born here in Canada and spent all your time in a first world country. I mean, Justin is just an anomaly. Seriously, Justin is like the youngest old person I know, because we can have conversations about things, and it's like, wow,
it's
really?
Chinese, I'm jaded before my time.
Yes, that's kind of a detour of an answer, but yes, I do share the name with the lead character in Gun Hill Road.
If you don't mind sharing this story, actually, I'm quite curious as to why you chose the name, if you don't mind sharing.
Well, it's actually, it's on my blog, but I actually went to one of those nominology is the study of names and what they mean and so on, so I picked one out, two out, actually, name the middle, first and middle out of that, and I read the meanings and I thought, hey, this sounds great, I'll take it. I tried a few different ones on, but Vanessa followed by Tara work is
What things struck you? I mean, what resonated with you with these films? Because you have one more film you saw.
One other film is called Orchids, and it's directed by and about an intersexed person in Australia who is doing a road trip to discover other people in the community, which she only became aware of. She thought she was the only one. And not only are there others out there in the community, some of them are people, a former teacher of hers, and also her siblings as well, as it turns out. And in fact, there is evidence that she has androgen insensitivity syndrome, is I think what she has, which is essentially your body doesn't absorb androgens like testosterone. So she certainly appears very, very female, but you know, there are other things going on at the same time, and AIS apparently runs in her family. So everyone is either a carrier or actually has the same condition. And what's incredible is that because everyone was felt so isolated, no one shared it with anyone else. So everyone thought they were the only people.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell me, because I actually had to look this up.
Right.
I had to look this up. What is let's see, intersexed.
Sexed versus.
Well, I know what transsexual is.
Right.
But intersexed, I had to look up. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, it's a series of different conditions, actually, that involve actual biological or chromosomal mixtures or hybrids, if you will. You know, for example, someone with, the XXY or XXXY, I don't know the name of that particular syndrome, but it is one. So you've got, you know, someone can appear any number of ways, but that's one example. You have somebody else who might have an actual anatomical development, you know, where you have, you know, mixtures of both types of genitalia or what have you. But they're all different kinds of intersexed conditions with sometimes very little in common with each other, but there is that kind of, you know, you go through the medical establishment from the moment you're born, in fact, even before that, and so everyone's trying to label you as being this or that, and that's really where you start to run into some problems.
Yeah, it's pretty, because, you know, normally you're supposed to be like female, quote unquote, as XX and
as soon as
XY.
They see certain things or other things,
but it's either the addition of or the lack of particular chromosomes. So say someone has XYY, then they tend to have like extremely quote-unquote male, so they're pretty aggressive. They usually have like really abnormally large growth, and most of these guys generally don't live that long because it is kind of a genetic abnormality.
Exactly.
It's been such an education even for me. You know, you never stop learning, and I'm really amazed at the courage of some of the filmmakers who are basically documenting their life.
That's right.
It's astounding. I saw a film called Madam X.
Oh, right.
It was interesting because it was very tongue in cheek. There was a martial arts component. There was all kinds of intrigue, shall we say.
It's very Asian cinema, for sure.
Well, it was just to read a bit about it. It was there was an Indonesian filmmaker, Kuswadi, Lucky Kuswadi. Wow, that's cool. One of the key organizers of Q Fest, it's the largest queer film festival in Asia, and for 9 years, they have nurtured Indonesian queer communities despite strong opposition, including bomb threats, raids, and protests.
I heard of this.
Kuswadi spins a community tale about a campy. It's basically kind of part martial arts film, part
superhero.
Yeah, there was a kabuki element to it. It's an amazing trip of a person who's captured, a lady boy, quote unquote, who's captured by a homophobic militant political party, escapes, then is taken to a troupe of dancers and becomes the glamorous superhero Madam X. It's really silly. It's really fun.
Reminds me of when I saw Iron Ladies a number of years ago, actually, which is a Thai film about a volleyball team.
What was really interesting to me was the kind of socially here in Vancouver, mm-hmm. who went to which films. Mm-hmm. A lot of the, I want to call them the A-list because I like making fun of just some of their posts and stuff. I find them both entertaining and sometimes it's like, really, really? How many Gaga posts are you doing today? 15? But they all went to the La La Land movie, the movie about, it's called Going Down in La La Land.
Right.
And so many of them went, of the gay men went there.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, the ones with the you know, the buff. Yeah, and they tend to draw in the biggest crowd.
And so it was really interesting which films I selected versus which form
which
films
ones I selected
they selected. And it's funny, I can usually tell. I selected every other film
that wasn't
the big popular thing. I selected that one. I don't know, it just seemed more socially relevant.
Yes. See, my thing is, you know, I do enjoy, like, I enjoy looking at, like, hot men, obviously, but and I used to screen films for the Youth Film Festival here in town. I used to be on the board, so we'd actually watch, you know, all the films that got sent in and pick the good ones. So I've seen my share of films, but the pretty boy ones, it's the same plot every year. So unless it's, you know, something particularly new, it's I'm more keen on seeing the documentaries.
Well, we have more on the Queer Film Festival during the 6 to 8 o'clock hour, which is Queer FM. We also have it on Queer FM Arts Extra, which is on Tuesday morning from 9:30 to 10:30. And we'll have much, much more about the film festival. Thank you so much for holding over from Shake a Tail Feather.
No problem at all.
We are going to step aside, have a little radio business, and get into our news broadcast from the from live. We broadcast it live from
Community.
Community. So this is Queer FM Community, and we are broadcasting from CITR 101.9 FM in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. We'll be right back. My name is Aiden Saint. Welcome to the Queer FM News Blog, recorded live here at Community.
This upscale pub, featuring lots of dark wood, a cool bar with your favorite ales on tap, and friendly servers, is a great place to hang with friends or to, maybe, make a new one. If you've only got time to stop in for a quick lunch, you'll be happy to see the menu featuring standard pub fare at reasonable prices. Sit inside or head out to the covered patio to indulge in one of the best things about Davie Street, cruising. Or, for you shy types, people watching.
The Fountainhead Pub at 1025 Davie Street. Open Sunday to Thursday from 11 a.m. to midnight.
Or drop by from Friday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Cheers.
This is Kay Tuckerman. I play Donna Sheridan in Mamma Mia, and you're listening to Queer FM on CITR 101.9.
My name is Aiden Saint. Welcome to the Queer FM News Blog, recorded live here at Community.
Flash mobs no longer just dance parties and pillow fights. They are growing into criminal threats. The July 4th fireworks display in the Cleveland suburbs of the Shaker Heights was anything but a family affair. As many as 1,000 teenagers mobilized through social networking sites turned out and soon started fighting and disrupting the event. Thanks to social networks like Twitter and Facebook, more and more so-called flash mobs are materializing across the globe, leaving police scrambling to keep tabs on the spontaneous assemblies. They're gathering with an intent behind it, not just to enjoy the event. Shaker Heights Police Chief D. Scott Lee said, "All too often, some of the intent is malicious." In London, recent rioting and looting has been blamed for part of the groups of youth using Twitter, mobile phone text messages, and instant messaging on BlackBerry to organize and keep a step ahead of police. And Sunday in Philadelphia, Mayor Michael Nutter condemned the behavior of teenagers involved in flash mobs that have left several people injured in recent weeks. Retailers are raising red flags about criminal flash mobs, which are wreaking a havoc on their business, causing concerns about the safety of their customers and employees, and directly impacting their bottom line. The Federation said in a report, which advised retailers to monitor social media networks and report planned heists to the police. Researchers use HIV to cure cancer, Gay News for Gay Denver. A look inside the HIV virus. Initial trials of a radical new treatment to cure the most common form of leukemia, one that kills 43,000 Americans every year, are showing a remarkable success. In three patients given a simple shot to treat the disease, two were cured completely, and one had a 70% reduction in the disease. Even more remarkable about the treatment is how it works. To insert new genes into human white blood cells, researchers used modified HIV. The deactivated virus pose no risk of causing infection, and the genes they carry teach the body's own immune system to kill the cancer cells. To fight chronic lymphatic leukemia, researchers first removed non-cancerous disease-fighting white blood cells from the patients, then, using empty shells of the HIV virus, inserted a gene that makes the immune cells rapidly reproduce. When they were put into human bodies through a small injection, they grew in number to form a huge army of immune cells that attacked and killed the cancer. Since the cells were from the patient's own bodies, there wasn't risk that the cells would attack the body, which sometimes happens after bone marrow transplants that are in themselves often risky and debilitating. In the three subjects of the trial, the sudden immune response to the cancer sparked flu-like symptoms, similar to when the body is fighting an infection. That faded away as the modified cells cleared the cancer from the body. Normally, trials for new treatments involve large studies with many more patients, but drug companies and government agencies had refused to fund the proposal, considering it far-fetched. Instead, a charity that funds speculative gene therapy research to fight cancer picked up the tab. But with all three patients showing remarkable recoveries, new funding is sure to follow. 1 year out, the patients are still healthy, but the scientists are yet to uncover whether it will last long-term or continue to show such consistent results in future trials. In any case, it's a big step in the fight against this form of cancer and a strategy that could prove effective against many others, too.
Donald Trump is angry over offshore wind farms near his Scotland golf course. When Donald Trump first dreamt about building his $1.6 billion golf complex off the beautiful coast of Scotland, offshore wind farms weren't part of his plan. But it now looks like that could be a reality, after a $243 million joint venture was recently announced to construct the European Offshore Wind Development Center. Trump issued a statement against the plans, saying he'd never have invested his own $60 million in the project if he had known this would be an issue from the start. According to Bloomberg, he also wrote in a recent email, quote, "I am very disappointed that Scotland may allow the development of a wind power plant directly off Aberdeen's beautiful coastline. Trump isn't the first person upset over wind farms. Anti-wind farm power groups have argued that turbines may cause health problems, and Germany is looking into soundproofing underwater construction sites to protect whales from the ensuing noise." David Roger, a spokesperson for the Scotland Wind Farm project, told The Guardian, "We've been in regular contact with the Trump organization and acknowledge the concern raised. Initially rejected by county officials, Trump appealed to authorities and even called himself an environmentalist." Now, brackets here, The Independent reports that the public gallery reacted so loudly to this claim that the inquiry chairman, James McCulloch, had to demand silence. Last year, Trump reportedly challenged global warming, declaring to a country club crowd, with the coldest winter ever recorded, with snow setting record levels up and down the coast, the Nobel Committee should take the Nobel Peace Prize back from Al Gore. Also last year, the Washington Post found that Trump's employees chopped down hundreds of trees at the Trump National Golf Club in Washington, D.C. While Trump is concerned about his views being ruined, some claim that he has done the same thing with his golf course in D.C. as well. Mark Hayes, an Arlington energy consultant, said, quote, "They replaced the trees with a huge flagpole, and the American flag is now flying up there. Which strikes me as sad. It's kind of an in-your-face now." Heather Taylor Meisel, The director of the National Resources Defense Council's Action Fund told the Washington Post, quote, he likes to pretend he's an environmentalist because of the landscaping on his golf courses, but at the end of the day, it seems he's the only one that actually believes that. Trump wants a clear view of the sea, but what are his thoughts on an underwater golf course?
The BBC says it has received complaints that Torchwood Miracle Day is too gay. The series starring gay actor John Barrowman features bisexual hero Captain Jack Harkness. Barrowman said recently that viewers of this series are likely to assume that Jack is excessively gay because of a number of raunchy scenes. The corporation said on its website that editorial guidelines state that all sexual content should be editorial justified and treated with appropriate sensitivity, as well being realistic. The response adds, Captain Jack Harkness is an established character in the series. The audience over the previous series of Torchwood have known him to be promiscuous and bisexual. So we felt the content we justified in terms of the context and characters would be within the expectation of regular viewers. We aim to depict relationships, whether heterosexual or homosexual, in an honest and realistic way. These scenes are not meant to be offensive. The BBC recently admitted cutting out parts of gay sex scenes in the current series. Although U.S. audience will see the raunchy scenes, BBC bosses decided they would be too explicit for a UK audience, even after The Watershed.
Petition calls for Sesame Street's Bert and Ernie to be married. Although Sesame Street's creators have never said the two characters are gay, viewers have long speculated that roommates Bert and Ernie are more than just friends. Perhaps a new petition started by Illinois resident Larry Scott was prompted by the changing tide in the U.S. In June, New York became the sixth and largest state to legalize same-sex marriage. Or maybe people just want Sesame Street to continue with its progressive message, which has seen the show deal with the sensitive topics of race, death, and self-acceptance. Some people might think that if Archie Comics could introduce its first gay character, then Sesame Street, which celebrated its 40th anniversary in 2009, should certainly let its two gayest characters marry. Opponents of the petition say that having Bert and Ernie marry all of a sudden could confuse children who may never have caught on to the rumors. Would children then think that men who live together must be gay? Other critics say the move would be too political for a children's program because these are, in fact, Muppets we're talking about, none of which are married or even in romantic relationships. The show is, after all, supposed to be about ABCs and 1, 2, 3s. But in the past, Sesame Street has introduced a Latina Muppet as well as an HIV-positive Muppet. So producers aren't exactly ignoring cultural shifts. Scott, the petition creator, believes that allowing the characters to marry or introducing a transgender character could help bullied and struggling LGBTQ kids to know they are beautiful and that their lives are worth living. So far, more than 700 other people agree.
Is a gay Star Trek character on the horizon? Bringing gay characters to sci-fi franchise Star Trek is a possibility, but they may have been there all along. According to J.J. Abrams in an interview with the website After Elton, the writer-director-producer, whose credits include TV's Lost and the films Cloverfield and Super 8, is responsible for the reboot of the popular series, including the 2009 film and the planned 2012 sequel. During the Television Critics Association press tour in Pasadena, California this week, Abrams was asked whether an obviously gay character will appear in a Star Trek movie. The filmmaker says that it's definitely a possibility, but notes that there are many people who say that there have been gay characters in the show all throughout. Abrams says that adding a character is something, quote-unquote, I would love to do, but I would be careful doing a story that would involve any of the characters and their personal lives. He recognizes the possible pitfalls of obtrusively inserting a LGBT character, saying, quote, when there is a black character or an Asian character, that's something that's an identifiable thing that you don't have to stop the story and say, let's now make a point of that person being Asian. Abrams adds, I just wouldn't want the agenda to be, whether it's a heterosexual relationship or a homosexual relationship, to tell a story that felt distracting from the part of the purpose of the story as is.
And now we come to the part of Queer FM that's the most fun, and that's our round-robin discussion of the news events. So we'll start off with Clement you hadn't actually seen the BBC's Torchwood yet. You have seen some censorship and some other things that have happened in some of the strangest places. Well, that's a laugh. That's a laugh worth discussing.
You know what? I find it really funny because censorship is such a huge deal and everyone finds everything so taboo on everything, right? So when they're saying that they're censoring stuff like gay sex acts on shows, what happened to showing Robbie Williams' penis in that music video that he did where he was basically taking off all his clothes walking through the streets of London? Like, what's the difference, really? Like, you saw his penis, and now you can't see someone pretending to penetrate somebody.
And this isn't the first time the Torchwood has had gay sex. They've had gay sex in pretty much all of their seasons. I think the fact that people are protesting is just is telling us that Torchwood is becoming that mainstream, and it is showing up on, you know, your average viewer's doorsteps, and now people are starting to know this, which isn't a bad thing because it is a pretty pro-queer show.
Well, as in an offshoot of Doctor Who and that universe, Torchwood in and of itself was an offshoot in line with UNIT. In the story, it's a supernatural paramilitary organization that there's so much violence and death in the show. It's like, okay, so you saw a gay couple where you didn't actually see full frontal nudity. You saw a side shot and someone's butt. Really? Yeah. Really, BBC? And here's the funny part. The Americans are showing it in its entirety.
It's British. What do you expect?
But the Brits have been showing Benny Hill since the 1980s. You see naked girls running around.
Yeah, Little Britain, so there you go.
So I just, it's like, because it's gay, because it's two men, now you have a problem. It's like Benny Hill's been chasing naked girls since, well, as long as I've been alive. We used to see it on late night TV in the United States.
Yeah, and you know, it does call to question what is acceptable on television. You know, naked girls, yes. But again, the guy who created Torchwood, Russell T. Davies, he also is the creator of Queer as Folk, which also had two gay men in quite similar angles, actually, and also showed butt. You know, the really cute part of it is that Russell T. Davies, you were kind of expecting this to happen because K-9 from the original, not the current Doctor Who, actually makes an appearance as, if you've seen the British version of Queer as Folk, actually makes an appearance as one of, like, Brian, the hot one. I think Brian's his name. The hot one gives the nerdy one a K-9 for his birthday. It was really cute. And this was your geek moment, brought to you by Queer FM.
Actually, I've got a question for you, Aidan. I personally don't remember, but when did the first Terminator movie come out? And this is relevant. When did the first Terminator movie come out? Somewhere in the 1980s, right?
Yes.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, there was a full frontal shot for a good couple seconds there of Arnold Schwarzenegger walking towards and then doing some rather grotesque things.
No, there was not.
No. 1984, they actually had a full back shot of him, and they had from the deep waistband area upwards. But
are you
not,
sure? Because I thought I'd seen that.
No. Hmm. So it's interesting, though, because they could have, but they wouldn't. Full frontal nudity, especially in the United States, is very rare. It really, really is. It's amazing that a show like Queer as Folk actually did as well on Showtime as it did. I remember watching it when it first came out and thinking to myself, my God, they're really going to show that. They really talked about things that you see, like the bathhouse,
the back room of the club.
Right. The start of video porn on the internet. Getting hooked on.
You need to hold your microphone close to you so that we can understand what you're saying.
No, you don't want to hear this.
Well, and they talked about crystal meth addiction. There was a whole GHB episode. A lot of things that, because, and we can get into a whole discussion about drugs and gay male sex, which we won't.
Well, but that would be a huge rehash all over again.
But the bottom line is that sometimes those two things are actually really well tied together. And what was so impressive about Russell T. Davies' portrayal was that it was true and unflinching. So just the soft, very, very, you know, very minor little bit of butt cheek that you see in Torchwood right now is so laughable compared to what else is on the internet and on network TV every night.
I think the difference, though, between internet and network television is that Internet, you have to go looking for something to a certain degree. Whereas on network television, you can accidentally come across something as you're flicking through the channels.
And my argument or my rebuttal to that, I've heard the think of the children.
Oh, I'm not one of the think of the children.
No. But the point is that if people have objections to what their children or what they themselves are seeing, there's this really cool invention. It's even in Bluetooth now. It's called a remote control. They have a thing called a power button, and you can turn it off. So I still have difficulty understanding why you can have lesbian sex scenes with two girls and see almost everything, yet this minor side profile and a little bit of one butt cheek becomes such a major bone of contention. Pardon the pun.
You do have to remember something, though. This is not coming from the director or the producer of the show. It's coming from the network heads. So they essentially have the power to cut whatever scene they want, and it's not the director's fault.
Heck, they couldn't even cut the entire show if they wanted, and they've done that before, where a show has gotten too provocative and they refuse to budge.
Exactly.
Yeah, but in its history, if anyone goes back and watches season one of Torchwood, it's kind of like True Blood. True Blood starts off with a very interesting scene in a car.
I love True Blood.
Torchwood, on the other hand, starts off with an alien that makes people, basically any person she comes into contact with, horny.
That would be a great power.
Right?
It would definitely be an interesting power. It could definitely be a curse after a certain amount of time if you couldn't turn it off.
That would be the problem.
Yeah, I know. And she couldn't turn it off. That was the problem. So, yeah, that episode pretty much set the tone for Torchwood. So, and actually, Children of Earth is a lot more political. They don't deal with aliens as much. It's all about being human. It's all about human frailty. What having mortality means, like, that's Miracle Day, that's basically what the show's been about. And it definitely is more mature in more philosophical sense. So it's actually a lot less sexual than it has been. So again, like I said, I think the fact that people are protesting it is just a testament to how popular the show is getting.
Well, do you think that it's more to do with the fact that now it's starting and it's gotten along? It's starting to pick up and go. People don't typically complain about something after a pilot. And mm-hmm. a pilot will do, it sets the standard. Yeah. And it's well known that after you do the pilot, you'll go about and you'll back off things for a little bit and then you'll wrap things up for the end of the season. It's a well-established pattern. But do you think that the protests are now coming into the light because there's more of them? And you've had more of these people get together over the past little while. Things, unfortunately, don't happen instantaneously, so there might be a delayed reaction there.
Well, Torchwood did start off really small, but it's been so successful. It's gotten through BBC 3 to 2 to 1, and now it's on BBC World, BBC America. So, you know, it definitely is getting a lot of reception.
The other thing is that this particular season is unique. It is being partly bankrolled by the BBC and partly bankrolled by Starz, which is part of the Showtime network. That's why they can have such lavish sets and so much more scope of the show this year. The ironic thing is Children of Earth last year, it's kind of like a miniseries. It was a number of small shows, 5-6 hours, and they were done. Last year's actually dealt with the death of Jack's partner.
And I have to say, like, Torchwood is the one show that has consistently kept me bawling. End of season two, halfway through season three. Season four, not so much, because, again, it's gone a bit more political as opposed to, you know, drama sci-fi. But, yeah, I'm just throwing that in.
To the actual fans of the show, however, it's to see Jack even being the old Jack is really interesting because he did lose his partner of many, many years. Years and had to watch him die. So it made me angry just watching it. It drove home for me some of the things I've lived through. So it's been a very poignant series, but this year they actually have American Cash behind it. And that's why it actually ironically can be seen in its entirety in the United States and not in the UK.
I think that's a good point, and I think that it's an excellent way to segue into the one that we were discussing earlier with Sesame Street, when you consider American Cash being behind that. It's an American series. It's been on the air for God knows how long.
Longer than you've been alive.
Calls. Yes. Now you've got calls for Ernie and Bert to get married, and apparently there's a petition out there that has gotten over 700 signatures, and they want these two characters to get married. Now, I'm interested in hearing what the three of you have to say on this, and I'll add my views afterwards, but I really want to know what each of the three of you think about that specifically.
Well, I do know this. In March, we covered the show Avenue Q, and there's a gay version of Bert and Ernie in that show, and they actually got married, or they have puppets with the rings on them to celebrate the legalization of New York. If anyone hasn't seen Avenue Q, they're hilarious. They're definitely parodies, and one of them has a crush on the other, and it actually isn't the actual roommates. Basically, the Bert's kind of your stereotypical
uptight,
you know, nerdy, speaks with a really high voice. He has a big crush on Rod, the Ernie of the group, but he's straight, and then Ernie, the Ernie one, actually finds a kind of buff, muscular, kind of biker version of himself.
Oh, hey.
And then those two puppets recently got married. It's awesome.
What do you think, Aiden?
The thing that you have to also keep into consideration is that the Muppets, as they exist now, didn't exist. They were part of the children's television network. I watched them in the 70s as a child. And in fact, little known fact, do you know that's where Morgan Freeman got his start?
That's right!
Yes.
Totally forgot about that.
In the 1970s, Morgan Freeman was actually one of the players of Sesame Street, and he was famous for getting a pie in the face over and over and having this expression of utter dismay and crying and so on and so forth. And so I grew up with Morgan Freeman as an actor. As far as the Muppets go, they really didn't come into their own until the Muppet movie. Before that, Jim Henson was doing this as part of public television. So the thing that Sesame Street has to watch out for, even though it is part of, it has some influence now from Muppet, for Henson Studios, is that it is on public television. And in the United States, there isn't anything both more conservative and progressive at the same time than public television.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yay, PBS.
Yep.
Let's make some money. And what do I think about them? I think they should get married. I'm sorry. We all knew, even as a kid, I knew, everybody knew, Bert and Ernie, you guys are homos, you're on our team, just get married, get done and over with. You share the same room, you pushed your beds together once, just get it done and over with.
And with that, Mr. C. Blaze comes out in favor of puppet marriage equality.
Oh, hells yeah.
It's interesting that you guys all bring this up, and I think I'll speak to each of you separately with this one. First, going to Justin, you mentioned Avenue Q specifically being a parody of the Ernie and Bert situation, and when you look at what's been done over the years with characters from a multitude of TV shows, whether it be because there were themes implied or whether it was fantasy work done on the behalf of aspiring directors, there have always been those sorts of adaptations and that alternative storyline where what if the characters were gay and what would happen if you were to pursue that sort of thing. The problem with doing that with Sesame Street, and I'm not going to come out in favor of it going one way or the other, but the producers have said in the past that they're not gay. And to be changing their mind on something like that, to be flip-flopping on the issue, doesn't necessarily do the show itself any favors. I think that they can be as gay appealing as they want. I think that they can go about and they can state the position as they like. But if they say that they're going to have the characters be one way, despite how flamboyant or how interesting their situation may be, then maybe they should just leave it alone and say stick to their guns.
I think Clement C. Blaze has something
he
to say.
Have you met? No, you're. I'm sorry. I hate to play the age card, but I've known a lot of people in our Vancouver gay community that have came out after being married for 20 years.
Ricky Martin.
Exactly.
Oh. Like, I'm part of the Vancouver community, but hey.
But hey, I have close friends that have been married for over 20 years, have kids that are 25 years old, and they just came out. There is that possibility of having Bert and Ernie be like, oh, look, we might be gay now.
There is that aspect to it. However, the unfortunate thing is that Bert and Ernie have never, during an episode of Sesame Street or any sort of Muppet production, ever addressed the issue. It has been something that's been quoted specifically by network executives. So you're having people who are in a story not commenting on a specific situation, but the network executives are coming out clearly in one direction with this. So it's not as though it's saying, oh, well, we're going to have to go back on anything with this here. It's not like someone being married for, as you said, 20, 25 years, and then saying and coming out, oh, I'm gay, and I believe that this is the way that I should be living my life. This is the way that I should be being true to myself. When you have a network executive who's involved in something like this on a story that is unfolding at their discretion, it's rather tough to do that once you've stated a specific instance and you've had the characters living a certain way but not addressing it.
So what you're saying is that with that thinking, that you'd be cool with it if the producers, the writers, the staff of Sesame Street went ahead and introduced a new storyline that would ease into this as an ongoing possibility for the future. I mean, let's face it, Bert and Ernie in actual years would be rather senior citizen by yep. now, as would The Simpsons, as would various other entities on
TV
television.
Classics, really.
Yeah, so, I mean, what you're saying is that you're not necessarily against it, but it would sure be nice if they'd have some context, a storyline preceding it, so that it wasn't just a bam, okay, we got married.
Precisely. It's like having a brick wall. You can have the audience run smack into the brick wall by having them marry over one or two episodes or making a big deal of it in that sort of regard. However, if you take a ramp and you put it up next to the brick wall and you set this over the course of what would be a television season, I'm not sure if Sesame Street even does the season format, but if you were to have something like that, set it over the course of a season and get people to run up the ramp and over the wall without even realizing that they're going over it, then I think that it would be a much more acceptable way to introduce it rather than just putting this jarring jut in the storyline.
Well, knowing how TV land works, because I work in TV land.
And how do you like TV land?
I love TV land. If, by any chance, if any of this does happen, of course there will be some extra context in it. It will be, in my experience, if something major like that would happen, it would be anywhere from 5 to 6 episodes worth of change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, in even in other media formats, like, say, take the X-Men Beast. Yes, that big, furry, blue furball that we all know and love. He came out as gay. Like, he wasn't gay originally, and, you know, he'd been in a couple, like, straight relationships for a while. But the character in the comic book series came out as gay a few years ago, and that was a thing. And they've had, you know, like, North Star is a gay character and has been since he's been created. So, you know, there have been some characters where they transition into it, some characters they didn't have a sexuality at first and then boom, they're gay. They've done versions where, say, Ultimate Colossus, they revamped the X-Men universe and now Colossus is big, sexy, steel Russian homo. Now, in television as well, again, going back to True Blood, this might be a spoiler for some of y'all, but Tara from season 1 to 3 completely straight, was just dating dudes, and then season 4, boom, she's with a girl. And I'm like, hells yeah.
Here's the question for you, though. Did the season start off with her doing the sudden change of behavior?
Mm-hmm. It came out of nowhere.
That's how you can do that, because if you go from one season to the next, you have as much creative license as you want for having something
like that. Well, the thing
they
did was, it actually was 1 year in the future.
Yeah.
Because it followed Sookie, who went somewhere for a year, and I'm not going to say where, and popped back into the storyline 1 year later, and it caught up with all the characters after 1 year. And after 1 year, she had been down in New Orleans, and one thing led to another. But you're right. They could do it because it was 1 year in the future. This has been a great conversation, and I looked at the time, and we're over time. So we're going to do one last little thing here on Queer FM, here at Community, and that is, really quick, what do you think? Donald Trump wind farm, come on, Oh, seriously?
Yes, I mean, I was looking at that one specifically, and I was thinking, dear God, Donald, I mean, you've already blown your chances of becoming the president to smithereens. You really have to rub salt in your own injury by going about and claiming yourself to be an environmentalist.
Oh, and on Queer FM, we did run the correspondence dinner with Obama's reaction to Donald Trump when he gave his long-form birth certificate and all of this, and of course, the Donald was in the room, and he got a chance to take more than a few pot shots at him. I just find it amazing that, wow, really? So those big smokestacks and the burning of coal and gas and everything else.
Take the back seat to the birth certificate.
Oh, yeah, I know. Seriously. So what do you think, Mr. C. Blaze, Donald Trump in general? What do you think? The hair is really bad.
How do you know I was going to say that?
Everyone has commented endlessly on his hair.
Oh, my gosh.
If you were as a hairstylist.
As a hairstylist, what would I do to his hair? I would actually, you know what? I would color it a better color.
Mm-hmm.
More of a blonde instead of an orange.
Yeah.
And you know what? His cut is actually not that bad. His stylist needs to just lighten up the front part and we'll be good.
I'd dye his hair green so it would just look like a big, annoying tomato.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's called tanning, not orange.
And for the record, who seriously eats pizza with a knife and a fork? Really?
I do.
In New York City, all the time on pizza commercials for a reason.
In New York City, you get like the chain pizza and you eat it with a knife and a fork. Donald, please. Seriously, you're a New Yorker. Show a little respect to the pizza. Come on.
All right. And that's pretty much all the time we have. So this has been Queer FM Community, our first ever show recording live from Community here at 1170 Butte Street. For anyone wishing to check us out, we are here with our youth from GAB. Today that youth is...
Neo.
Neo Canes. And you are here with your hosts, Justin Saint.
Clement Seablaze.
And Aiden Saint.
You're here listening to CITR 101.9.
This is Justin Saint for Queer FM on CITR 11.9, and I'm here talking about the Pinoy Indie Film Fest. Now, if you've been watching the Queer Film Festival, and now that it's over, and you still want to watch some queer films, well, you're in luck, because the Pinoy Indie Film Fest is actually featuring two queer films. One is called Jay, and the other one is called Daybreak. Now, they both feature Coco Martin, who is has been dubbed the Indie Prince of Philippine Independent Cinema. And he has won lots of acting awards in the Philippine movie industry. Now, he is in both of these gay films. The first one is called Daybreak, and that happens on August 26th, Friday. And this one is about two gay men who... go to a rest house in Taal, Batangas, and at this rest house, they kind of struggle with, you know, dealing with their relationship and trying to figure out whether they want to break up or continue their relationship despite, you know, and it kind of tackles some of the struggles of living in a mostly conservative, very Catholic Philippines and, you know, keeping a gay relationship going. The other film is called Jay. And it is called Jay because it is about a gay TV producer called Jay Santiago, who is documenting the family of a gay hate crime victim who, and the victim also happens to have the name Jay. In this case, Jay Mercado. So in the movie, the producer, Jay, kind of... gets into the private life of the family and the murder victim's lover, and as a result is kind of forced to tackle his own homosexuality. So both of these films are happening at the Pinoy Indie Film Fest. That's happening at Empire Theater on Bradville Street, and it starts August 20th. That was now yesterday, and it goes until August 28th. That's a Sunday. So there's 10 films overall, and it's the first time the Filipino independent films are being produced in a film fest here in Vancouver. So if you're a fan of independent films, still want more from, you know, Queer Film Festival, then, hey, go check it out. This is Justin Saint on Queer FM CITR 101.9.
Looking to connect with gay guys like yourself?
Did you know that the friendly neighborhood guys at Health Initiative for Men do more than just hand out condoms? Working with gay guys in your community, HIMS volunteers, nurses, and staff bring awareness to all aspects of gay men's health.
They also offer fitness and yoga classes, counseling and peer support, and even STI and rapid HIV testing through their sexual health center.
Check him out online for more information at www.checkhimout.ca. They're here to help you make the most out of your life.
And that's it. Wow, that was a quick hour, wasn't it?
It was a quick hour.
Well, this is Queer FM Community here from both Community and from CITR Studios here in beautiful British Columbia, University of British Columbia, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. We're going to go out with a little bit of music from Mamma Mia, but...
if you could already tell.
But stay tuned for Queer FM. Queer FM's on from 6 to 8 p.m. here, and just coming up in a few minutes, we're going to have a review of the Mamma Mia performance that was done at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre here in Vancouver, as well as some more queer film fest stuff. There's just a lot of content. You got to stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We're here for 3 more hours.
My name's Aiden Saint.
And this is Justin Saint.
And this has been Queer FM Community.
Or something.
Age does not wither her.
I was expecting a rather stout matron.
Nah, she's still Donna.
Just one look and I can hear a bell ring. One more look and I forget everything.
Summer is fast approaching, which can only mean one thing. The 2011 Scotiabank AIDS Walk for Life is only a few short months away.
Registration is now open for this year's walk, taking place on September 18th at Sunset Beach. Proceeds from the AIDS Walk for Life allow members of Positive Living BC to access health products and services not subsidized by other resources.
More information about this year's walk can be found at AIDS Walk for Life. Vancouver.ca. Run, run, with her,
run, run. This is Kay Tuckerman. I play Donna Sheridan in Mamma Mia, and you're listening to Queer FM.